Welcome to Talking to Grandma, a weekly podcast that elevates stories, science, and strategies to help you raise and teach multilingual and bilingual children. I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides, founder and CEO of Bilingual Generation, an organization that helps children with bilingualism in their bones stay connected to their heritage languages and cultures. I'm also a Harvard-educated doctora who has experienced losing, recovering, and passing on my heritage language to my children. Whether you are a parent, grandparent, teacher, researcher, school leader, or simply someone interested in the topics of language learning and language preservation, this podcast is for you. Through interviews with amazing guests and solo episodes, you will find the resources, guidance, and strategies needed to support you in your journey. Let's get started. Today, we speak with the brilliant and funny Mike Alfaro about the impact of assimilation on identity. We also explore his inspiration for the creation of Millennial Lotería and Si Sabo Kids.
So I designed these books so that parents who may have grown up being No Sabo kids, and now they're No Sabo adults, but they don't want their kids to go through it. They want their kids to learn a language. They can use these books and help them learn, even if they specifically don't know.
Mike Alfaro is a creative director, content creator, and children's book writer with over 370,000 followers on social media at Millennial Lotería. He is recognized as one of TikTok's 2023 Latinx Visionary Voices. He also earned a spot in the inaugural class of the LA Times 2022 Vanguardia List, celebrating Latino innovators, investigators, and power players breaking through barriers. His influence extends beyond social media, having been profiled by the New York Times, The Today Show, The Kelly Clarkson Show, Time Magazine, Oprah Magazine, Telemundo, and many more outlets. Originally from Guatemala, he now resides in Los Angeles with his wife, Amy, baby Maya, and dog, Bugsy. Tune in to hear Mike emphasize the importance of breaking stereotypes and showcasing the diversity of the Latina community. Hi, Mike. Welcome to the show. We are thrilled to have you on today. We always like to start with hearing a little bit about your personal story. And so let's start there. Can you tell us a little bit about your experiences with language loss or language preservation growing up?
Well, I grew up in Guatemala. I was born and raised there until I was 18 years old. And I grew up speaking Spanish. My parents didn't speak any English, but they really wanted me to learn another language because they said that it would open the doors to the world for me. And that was an opportunity that they never had growing up. So they really wanted to give me that opportunity. So very early on, my mom, even though she didn't know the language, she was using early education tools like flashcards or books that she would get from, bookstores that were in English. And she would just show me like flashcards of things, and it would say the English word and the Spanish word, and I would have to learn that. Obviously, going into school, it was a lot more intensive. I did half a day in English and half a day in Spanish. So I really grew up, you know, speaking English in school and then Spanish at home. So when I came to the United States, my English was already pretty good. And I think I found a lot of people were very surprised at my level of English proficiency when I came. When I told them I was from Guatemala, they'd always be like, why don't you have an accent? You don't sound like you're from Guatemala. Although I do think I have a little bit of an accent, and I think, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that I wouldn't be from Guatemala if I, like, that everybody needs to speak broken English or something like that. So I always find that a little bit weird. But here in the United States, I came to Orange County, which is very white, not like Santa Ana, where there's a lot of Latinos, but I mean like Orange County, like around Newport. And I felt, you know, a lot of pressure just to fit in. And I think that people, since they heard my English, sometimes they didn't even question that I was from another country. So I definitely assimilated a little bit easier into the United States because of my English proficiency.
So did you feel like those assimilation forces kind of like impacted your experience or like what you felt like you represented outwardly to folks that you were interacting with? Because, you know, we'll get into this, but you are like the face of a brand called Millennial Lotería, which is so grounded in our Latino culture. So, you know, what was the journey like to get to that being your calling and the work that you're doing?
Yeah, I think for me, Millennial Loteria was a, it started off as a personal project. After years of being in the United States, I had been, you know, I came here in 2006 and I didn't start Millennial Loteria until 2017. So that was about 10 years of my experiences. And throughout that, I felt that the people were very shocked sometimes to see that I was from Guatemala, that I was Latino and or an immigrant. And that always was very telling to me, to the level of stereotypes that are in the United States of what people feel Latinos look like, what Latinos sound like, what Latinos are into. I remember when I came to school here, people would be like, oh, how did you learn about, you know, your university, Chapman University, where I went in Orange County? How did you learn about it? I was like, oh, I went, you know, I learned about it online. They're like, oh, you guys have internet in Guatemala. Wow. I was like, yeah, we do have internet in Guatemala. When I first came to the United States, I had a cell phone in Guatemala, but my cell phone didn't work and this is again pre-iPhone, you know, mm-hmm. when I came to the United States. So for the first month or two, you know, I didn't really have a cell phone. I was trying to figure out how do I get a cell phone plan in the US, you know, and trying to figure all that out. And I remember when I got my cell phone, I was like, oh guys, I finally got a cell phone. People were like, for the first time? I was like, no.
Oh my God.
Not for the first time. Like, and so I just felt like my experiences were that there was a lot of looking down on Latinos, looking down on immigrants, thinking of us lower sort of in a lesser way. And for me, after 10 years of experience that constantly, Millennial Loteria is very modern. It's very aspirational, I feel. It showcases mm-hmm. Latinos in a way that is very now, you know, not like our parents' generation or even before that. Like it takes us into a world where we're very technologically savvy. We're, you know, we're business people. We're killing it in the United States too. Like when you think about all the Latino buying power that's here. And so for me, it was a way of showcasing how modern our culture and our generation really is, faced with everything that I had to experience growing up. And I think it's my way of breaking those stereotypes that I saw reflected upon me.
Yeah, I love that. And it is so fun, right? Like it's fun. And it's also like shows the diversity and multifaceted nature of who Latinos are, right? Breaking stereotypes, exactly like you say. How was Millennial Loteria first received when you shared it with the world?
When I first started, I mean, I think it had very positive reaction with my friends. I think with my generation, especially with all the, you know, it was in 2017. So one of the first cars that we created was La Feminist, in response a lot to the Women's March and the Me Too movement mm-hmm. that was gearing up at that time. And I think that really kind of started showcasing what this project was about. It was taking something like La Dama, which is a stereotype of old school, like femininity. Especially for Latina women, we're just like La Dama. That's what it was, you know, that there wasn't anything else. So I think it's turning it more into La Feminist reflected more the culture of today, of me, of all my friends, of, you know, what was going on in the world. And I think that really got a lot of positive attention from people because they realized, okay, you're trying to update something that seems outdated, but you're still doing it in a way that reflects the heritage of it. Like I didn't change completely La Dama. I just like kind of made La Dama, instead of walking down the street with flowers in her purse, I had her walking down the street with like a pancarta, you know, like marching for her rights. And so that's, I think people realized, okay, it's just a small update to it that still preserves the heritage of it, but also brings it into a new light that feels more representative of Latinas nowadays. And then I started doing, you know, El Catrín became El Hipster, El Mundo became La Student Debt, because it's like the weight of the world on your shoulders. And I started playing with more of those issues that affected our community. And so millennials received it, you know, incredibly positively. It was also, I did it in Spanglish because when you talk, I mean, we're Latinos and we're having this conversation in English here in the United States. You see so many Latinos, especially young ones in the US that speak English. So I wanted to reflect that as well. Or speaking Spanglish, which is really why the game is in Spanglish. And I did get some pushback on that because there's people that are like, how dare you change, you know, this idea that the game was in Spanish and how dare you change it into English and Spanglish. And to me, that always felt like a weird reaction just because all those comments that I always got that were negative about it, they were all in English. And I was trying to tell people, like, I'm not changing the game. I'm just reflecting society nowadays. And Latinos in the U.S., we speak Spanglish. Some Latinos only speak English. You know, some Latinos understand Spanish, but they prefer to speak English, and they kind of just go back and forth. And so I'm just reflecting that reality. If you want to play the game in Spanish, we have a Spanish version that's sold in Mexico. You know, it's like there's all these different things that open up the world of possibilities. And I think that's why Millennia Loteria and Loteria, I think as a whole, had a really big resurgence when I started this game. If you go back and see sort of what Loteria was like before and now how it's entered the mainstream, we're at Walmart, we're at Target, we're at Amazon, we're Barnes and Noble. You can find Loteria now accessible to a lot of people. And the reason was because for the longest time, it was only available in Spanish. And now that I added a little Spanish component, all of a sudden the doors of this game were open to so many other people. And that's why you see games like, you know, Monopoly has a Spanish version. Like all these other games have Spanish versions as well. So I'm just doing sort of the same thing that all these games have done before, but introducing a new generation of Latinos and some that maybe felt like they couldn't play the old game because it was only in Spanish, opening the door for them to also take this tradition in and make it their own.
Yeah, yeah. And I love that because we are culture carriers of, you know, what we've inherited, but we're also culture makers, right? We are reflecting what the times are, and this is such a beautiful representation of that. And I think you're also illustrating the point that like language and culture are deeply intertwined. You know, when people have these reactions about whether the game should just be in Spanish and what it is like to have it in Spanglish, but even though they're intertwined, it's not like they're mutually exclusive. So just because you don't speak Spanish doesn't mean that you're not Latino or you don't have access to that cultural capital or those cultural experiences. So this is really beautiful that you're making it accessible in that way. You also mentioned that your products are in Target and Walmart. It really has, you know, exploded where we've seen Millennial Loteria and really gone into a bigger audience and mainstream media, like you were on the Today Show, which is really awesome. How have you seen Millennial Loteria playing a role around how Latinos are represented in media?
I mean, for me, I saw a very, very, the representation in media for us, I mean, we've come a little bit of a ways, even in the short time since Millennia Loteria has started. But back then, there wasn't really a lot of TV shows. Even in 2017, you go back and there wasn't really a lot of stuff that represented Latinos in a very modern way. And even today, I feel it's hard for me to see a Latino show that doesn't have to deal with like a familia or an abuelita or something. Like, it's hard for me to, I wish there was just sort of like a show that showed a diverse group of Latino friends that just came from different places. And it was just focused on their friendship, not really on about the familial relationships. I think that's something that I would love to see represented, just because a lot of Latinos, especially immigrants who come to the United States, we deal with like found families, you know, people that come together, not necessarily like always having to have our abuelitas or your parents in the picture. Specifically for me, when I don't have a lot of family in the United States and I've had to build my own family here. But for me, I think there's a certain aspect of Millennial Loteria reflecting society. And that's, I think, that I wish media did more, where it just reflected what is going on with Latinos instead of dealing with stereotypes or tropes that people think, well, this is what Latino families are like. You know, like there's always the idea of Latinos. Listen, I love my family. I love them. They're a big part of my life, but it's not everything I'm about. And I think there's a lot of Latinos out there who want to see that representation of them just being like individuals. And when you come into America, there's that, you know, there's that idea of you're making it on your own or making it. And I think I would like to see a lot more shows or a lot more representation in media that deals with Latinos as individuals, as part of different friend groups, as opposed to always being about, you know, dealing with our abuelitas that, you know, can't pay their rent and all that kind of stuff. It feels like I've seen that trope many, many times before. And that's why in Millennial Loteria, there's no cars that are la chancla or el guacamole or la, it's more like la selfie. It's just more modern representation. And that's what I wish I would see more of. And you see shows too that do really well where you know, being Latino is part of a character, but it's not everything the show's about. You see franchises like Scream, like the Scream movies, even though they've taken a turn with what they did to Melissa Barrera, which I think is awful. But again, it was movies that made just, you know, so much money, and they had lead characters that were Latinas, but it was about their individual story, not just about them being Latinas and what that means, you know?
Right, definitely. Yeah, we're kind of not afforded the range of characters that you might see your, like, you know, white actors getting access to this type of character and that type of character and that, and just all of the ranges of experience. Whereas in communities of color, it's often kind of these typecast narratives that you're sharing. I definitely feel you on that. And I think as an educator, where I see that a lot is in children's literature. Mm-hmm. We often see, mostly in children's literature, the main characters are about animals or majority white children, with a much smaller percentage of Latinx main characters or African-American or Asian or anything like that. And so, number one, the representation just isn't there. And number two, when it is there, it often may fall into these stereotypical categories. And so that's also a really interesting kind of place that you found yourself in from starting Millennial Loteria and showing, kind of bringing this modern take to it and showing the diversity of the Latinx identity. And now you are starting a children's book kind of line that is called Seesawo Kids. So I'd love to dive into that. And let's start with the name, Seesawo Kids. I love the name. This kind of plays on No Sabo Kids, mm-hmm. which we hear a lot about and has been traditionally a derogatory term for children who may not speak Spanish or who may not speak Spanish perfectly or not conjugating the verbs correctly. So why did you choose Seesawo Kids?
First of all, No Sabo Kids are like probably the number one buyers of Millennial Loteria because it's English. So I feel like I have a duty to that community because they supported me to support them. And, you know, I think every once in a while, a funny No Sabo joke is okay. I understand we can laugh at ourselves. We can laugh at ourselves. But I think when it starts to become derogatory, you know, and I think for No Sabo Kids, it's become a, sometimes I like it when they reclaim that word and they're mm-hmm. like, yeah, I'm a sabo, like, no, mm-hmm. Ike, you know, la queso, ike. La queso porte. Yeah. there's certain things there that I think are, it's changing in that sort of term where it's kind of being reclaimed. And for me, calling this line, and again, the line is called Seesawo Kids. That's our, we're going to have many books, many products. We're working on like 10 different books coming out aside from the first three that we have coming out on March 19th. But yeah, the line Seesawo Kids was really because I wanted to almost, you know, Seesawo is funny because it's still not the way you would say Seese, you know, that would be how you do it. Mm-hmm. But Seesawo, because I wanted to make it so that when you start learning a language, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay mm-hmm. to not be 100% fluent at the beginning. And so calling it Seesawo Kids was a way of me to kind of poke a little fun at the stereotype, but also make it okay for people to realize that it's okay if you don't know perfect Spanish when you're learning it. I didn't know perfect English when I was learning it. And you just have to get over that that fear and sometimes that stigma that is placed upon people. So for me, Seesawo Kids was a way of making light of the situation, but also making it okay for people to understand that it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to like not be 100% fluent on something if you're not practicing, but there shouldn't be any fear in that. And so Seesawo Kids is really about making it okay to start learning certain words. And our books are really designed to help kids learn English or Spanish. You know, it could go both ways. You could give it to Latinos to learn English. You could give it to people in America to learn Spanish. And I really thought about my experiences growing up with my mom, where she didn't know the language, but she was trying to teach me. And so I designed these books so that parents who may have grown up being No Sabo kids, and now they're No Sabo adults, but they don't want their kids to go through it. They want their kids to learn a language. They can use these books and help them learn, even if they specifically don't know. Every book that I'm doing has a pronunciation guide at the end that's spelled out phonetically, so that if you don't know how to say círculo or fresa or, you know, rojo for the different books that we have, there's a pronunciation guide where you can go and you can like sound it out phonetically. And that way you can teach the correct pronunciation of it as well.
Oh, that's so great. Yeah, and makes it so accessible for families who have that like desire to reclaim not just the term nosabo, but also the language. Mm-hmm. And to have those adult supports there is just really great. I want to see if there are any connections here. Maybe they're not, but you have recently become a father. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm curious to know if this, like what that shift to parenthood has been like for you, and if it has inspired or been connected to any of the work that you've been doing recently.
Oh, 100%. That's why I really created this line for my baby. She's 15 months old, kind of pretty soon in a couple days. And so she's obviously learning to speak and saying different words. And I'm definitely taking an approach that is a little bit more Spanglish. I think code switching is something that is going to be happening with kids that grow up in English and Spanish anyway. So I really wanted to create books for her. That's really the reason why I started this line as well, because it felt time for me to create books that, as she's growing up, I'm going to create books that go along with her age, to try to keep that Spanish sort of alive in my life, because she's growing up in the United States. My wife, she speaks English. She doesn't, you know, she speaks a little Spanish from like just being with me and interacting with my family. So we're both speaking to her in, you know, at me in Spanish and then her in English. And I think she's learning that way as well. And so these books really were catering to making sure that I could teach her about shapes and about fruits and about colors in English and in Spanish. And that's just the way that I think I'm raising her to be able to at least have that knowledge of Spanish growing up, just like I did, how my mom did with me.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I mean, I've seen some previews of the books and they look beautiful. As mm-hmm. I mean, we're no surprise because Millennial Loteria is beautiful too. So Sisabo definitely has that kind of beautiful, same aesthetic, elevated, which is great. But I also want to know, it's not just like a círculo or triángulo, but they're situated within a cultural context, which is really beautiful too, because
yes.
Kids can see themselves represented in the culture while also learning something. And I think this was something that was really missing for me growing up. I mean, like, I never saw myself represented in books. Like, I think it was just like Clifford the Big Red Dog and like Amelia Bedelia and like books like yeah. that. So tell me a little bit about why you chose to choose the images that you chose yeah. and the context that you chose.
So the first line of the Sisabo Kids book, it's a 3-book collection called Los Street Vendors, bilingual books about color, shapes, and fruits. And what I really wanted to do was center street vendors as, you know, elevate them to the center of these books. And it's about children, these Sisabo kids, you know, a group of friends that are learning about shapes and colors and fruits from street vendors. Because I also wanted to make sure that there's been a lot of violence against street vendors. There's been a lot of negativity towards street vendors. And so I wanted to represent them as a important part of the community. They are doing hard, honest work. And I wanted to elevate that into a way that was a little bit more aspirational as well. And so the, you know, El Paletero is teaching kids about shapes with the different shapes of the paletas. So there's a paleta that looks like a círculo. There's a paleta that looks like a rectángulo. There's a paleta that looks like an estrella. Una paleta de luna, because if you ever ordered paletas from paleteros, they come in different shapes. You know, there's like a SpongeBob one and like a Tortuga Ninja one. And so I wanted to like have that idea come into the books of El Paletero. And there's another book that is El Puesto de Flores, that is about a flower stand where this lady is helping kids pick out flowers for their mom. And she's, you know, showing her all the different colors, una flor roja, una flor amarilla, una flor blanca. And so you're learning about different colors through flowers. And then we have obviously El Carrito de Frutas, which is, you know, the kids are hearing, you know, the guy yell out what fruits he's got to sell. So he's yelling out piña, you know, manzana, mango. And that way you're learning about what these fruits are called in Spanish, while also understanding that this is helpful coming from a street vendor. So it's, they're really nice, fun, you know, simple stories for kids ages, you know, 1 to 3 or 4. And even when you get to like the, you know, 5 and 6, then it becomes a little bit more also about like bilingualness, because at first you can just start with one language. And one of the things that I've noticed too about children's literacy, and you can chime in on this, let me know if I'm off on this, but usually I feel that a lot of the books, they're written with one language in mind. So they're written in Spanish or in English. And then somebody says, oh, well, we need to do a bilingual version mm-hmm. for the market. Okay, so let's get someone to translate it. And then it just becomes a translation of the book. And for what I've always approached work or anything I do is that I know both languages. So I'm not only writing in English, I'm writing in both. And so when I wrote these books, they were written with both languages in mind. If you read them, they rhyme in English. So they're very like, it's a little rhyme. It's very cute. It's a kind of like nursery rhyme type of vibe with them. So they rhyme in English, but they also rhyme in Spanish. And they are, you know, correct translations and adaptations. Obviously, some things will switch around when you talk in English or Spanish, like the way that the sentences are structured, but they are still, you know, they're saying the same thing and they're saying it in a correct way. And it's just and it still rhymes. It still works. It's not like, because you have sometimes things that are in English that rhyme and then they turn into Spanish and it doesn't rhyme at all, you know? And so I wanted to make sure that no matter what language you read it in, it still made sense. It still kept that charm. And you knew that this was done. It wasn't Google Translate who did this for you. It was someone who kind of like understood it. And one of the things too that I really like about these books that is different that I haven't seen before is that the books, you know, usually you have like English on top and then the Spanish sort of translation at the bottom or somewhere like placed around in different books. And in these books, we start with English as the dominant language, Spanish. But when you get to the middle part of the book and you start to learn the different shapes, it switches and Spanish becomes the dominant language. So that if you're reading it in English, you're forced to start reading in Spanish. And you start to, it almost allows you to start a little bit more like, okay, let's get in the story a little bit, get more comfortable with it. And then you switch and you're like, okay, now I need to start speaking in Spanish. So it's really fun to see that twist. And it pushes in the idea of like Sisabo kids and the idea of bilingualism. And it's okay to like switch between the two languages. You're going to be fine. Your kid is going to be okay if they're switching back and forth. Again, it makes people who may not be okay with like reading a full book in Spanish and they're like, oh my God, I don't know how to do this, kind of ease into it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so great. It is truly bilingual design. And I think, you're spot on in terms of books that are bilingual are often written in English first and then translated. So this has been a huge challenge for a lot of teachers that we work with in early childhood classrooms, just finding high quality, authentic Spanish books. And so this sounds like an incredible resource that it is written correctly in Spanish and written correctly in English. And as you mentioned, like if families are using this and they didn't grow up speaking their heritage language, they're a no sabo kid, like it's hard for you to tell, right? Like you're like, oh, well, I'm not sure if this is translated correctly or incorrectly. So it is also great to know that the quality of these books is really high and done intentionally in both languages. And that is not a common thing. So an educator, I endorse this.
And I will say it is hard too when we talk about correctly in Spanish, because Spanish is so diverse. It's so diverse. Mm-hmm. There's so many different places that have different words for different things. And, you know, it's so varied. So there's not really like one correct way to speak Spanish either, because different places, different cultures, you're going to encounter different words that are different. And so with these books too, I try to keep it as neutral as possible with sort of the words that we use, so that, you know, sometimes there's different, obviously people call different things at different places. So I don't want to always make it say like, if you're from, I'll say, so somewhere else, it might be the same words, but I try to keep it as neutral as possible. So no matter where you're from, you're still getting sort of those, nothing's going to seem too crazy or out there for you. You're like, what is this word? I would never call it this. Mm-hmm. So we try to keep it simple again, because it's for kids. I think moving on, I would love to do a book, you know, about how different words are said in different countries. Mm. So that it also opens up the world to like see there's many ways to speak Spanish, not just one correct way. And so again, this is why the Si Sabo Kids line is starting with Los Street Vendors, you know, our 3-book collection. But we have, I don't know if I can announce anything yet, obviously, but we have 10 books coming out later on in the year. And then we have 5 more products coming out at the end of the year as well that are not just books, but more like games and educational activities and different things. And so I want to make sure that, you know, it'd be cool to do a matching game at some point, which we're developing, but a matching game where you could have 2 words in Spanish that mean the same thing, but from different countries. And so you're learning different words in Spanish from different places, I think would be really fun and interesting to do, obviously for a much advanced sort of learner. But like I said, as my child grows, as she starts advancing in her Spanish and English education, I want these books and these products to grow with her as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike, you have to make her your business partner. It sounds like she is inspiring a lot of the work here.
My partner in work, Gerardo Guillén, who illustrated Si Sabo Kids books, obviously we work together in conjunction and like, you know, illustration and everything and creative direction, figuring out what everything looks. He also had babies recently and they're about 2 years older than mine. And so he's going along as well, seeing everything that his kids are teaching. And his first son, Ollie, he speaks more Spanish than he does English. And so these books are also really helpful to him to be able to teach his child to speak Spanish to now that he's, you know, entering, you know, school and daycare and all that other stuff, that to really help these books not only help him learn English, you know, that so it goes both ways. And so I think we're both having different experiences in how we're raising our babies. And that's what's impacting how we approach this brand, because everybody has so many different experiences of raising a bilingual Latino child in the United States. It's not just one uniform way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm super excited for the launch of the first round of Si Sabo books, but also for everything to come. I just feel like the perspective, the care, the intentionality, the representation that you're putting behind this line is just so amazing and much needed. So I cannot wait, Mike. And I know that our audience, you know, we have a lot of listeners who are caregivers, that are moms and dads and tios and tias and teachers and school leaders. And if they're interested in learning more about either Millennial Lotería or Si Sabo Kids, where can they find more information?
Social media for us is really the best way to reach us. You can follow us on Instagram or on TikTok for Millennial Lotería for that. Or you can follow us on Instagram for Si Sabo Kids. That's our handle. And that's where we're going to be posting a lot more. And we just started, you know, our Instagram a little bit ago. But it's also going to be a helpful resource for teaching kids Spanish. It's not just going to be a place where you can go and see, oh, here you can buy the books. But I'm going to make it so that this is a, you know, we will have words that you can teach your kids, simple things. So it also I want to make that Si Sabo Kids Instagram account also be helpful and educational to parents, and not just somewhere where people can go to like buy our books. We really want to build that community there as well. So that's really the best place to go. But, you know, if you want to purchase the games and the books, you can always go on, they're for pre-order on Amazon. But by the time this comes out, I think the books will be out in the world, just coming out. So you can always find them online. We're going to be at Barnes & Nobles. And hopefully by the end of the year, we'll probably get into bigger mass retailers like Target, crossing fingers, you know, so hopefully we can manifest that happen.
We are manifesting. It will happen. Mike, it has been such a joy to talk to you. And we love to end our shows with asking our guests about what is bringing them joy these days. So can you share your joy with us before we close out?
Oh, my joy is just spending time with my baby. I am very excited that I'm as an entrepreneur, I have a very flexible schedule, which is something that I am so grateful for. Since the moment my baby was born, I've been able to spend every day with her, you know, aside from a few trips here and there for business. Every day I take care of her half the day, and my wife takes care of her the rest of like half of the day and we switch off with work since we both work from home. So the joy for me has just been able to spend this time with her and watching her grow up. She's taking her first steps, and I, you know, even when things are rough, like last night, we didn't get a lot of sleep because she's teething. But, you know, I was just up with her in the middle of the night, just like playing and like chatting and, you know, singing little nursery songs and playing with her stuffed toys. And I was like, this is moments that I'm never going to get back. You know, that she's always going to be, this is the smallest she's going to be. So even though I'm tired, even though I'm like up late at night and it's like 1 o'clock in the morning and I'm so tired after a full day of work, it's like, it's still, that brings me joy to have. So I'm just enjoying every moment.
Yeah. Oh, that's so beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing your joy with us and for taking the time to speak with us. I'm so excited about all the work that you are doing, and it has been such a pleasure to talk with you today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you liked what you heard, take a minute to share this podcast with a friend or colleague. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast platform. Your ratings and reviews help us to keep the podcast lights on. We can't do this without your support. Every subscription, share, follow, download, and review makes a big difference and helps others find our show. Also, we love hearing from you. Tell us what you think of the podcast. Email us at hello@bilingualgeneration.com. You can also slide into our DMs on Instagram at Talking to Grandma. If you are interested in learning more about our workshops and curricular tools for schools serving multilingual and emerging multilingual students, visit our website at www.bilingualgeneration.com or write us at hello@bilingualgeneration.com. Talking to Grandma is owned by Bilingual Generation. Rebecca De Leon is our editor and producer. The artwork for Talking to Grandma was created by Nancy Guevara. And I'm your host, Dr. Veronica Benavides. See you next episode.